the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, and welcome to That's a Laugh. I'm Sharon Silcox with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Our 2018 North Carolina State Fair has just ended. Here to put his own spin on fairs is Donald Davis. I have a story from his book, Tales from a Free-Range Childhood. From the back cover of the book, Donald Davis grew up near Waynesville, North Carolina, and is a graduate of Davidson College and Duke Divinity School. A retired Methodist minister, he now tours the country 10 months a year, during which he makes approximately 300 storytelling presentations. The story I will be reading today is titled The Octopus. There was not a lot to do in Waynesville when I was a child. There were two movie theaters, a skating rink, and Charlie's drive-in restaurant. That was about all. This meant that any time anything unusual came to town, it was really a big deal. Every year or two, Rubinoff and his violin came. There were school shows and night shows. Everyone went to see Rubinoff and hoped that he would play The Flight of the Bumblebee as his big finale. Every so often, Preston the Magician, winner of the Blackstone Cup, came. He would hypnotize some volunteer teenager and have them on display on a bed in the window of Massey Furniture Company the afternoon before his big show. I remember well the year it was Gray Watkins. People gathered and gawked with amazement. That night, the show was sold out. I once recall a tiny circus that actually set up in a field below our house. There was one small elephant, a scantily clad trick rider, whom even I knew was too old to be dressed the way she was. But of all these visiting entertainments, my perpetual favorite was simply the time each September when the rides came to town. Big red, black, and white posters would go up all over town. Straits a show, riding devices were coming. Excitement was in the air. Finally, the time would come, and Joe and I would start begging. We begged each night at the supper table. I remember that I was about 8 years old, and he would have been turning six when we really got interested, mostly because we heard all the other children at school talk about going to the rides. Can we go to the rides? Please, let us go to the rides. Don't you want to go to the rides? Everybody that we know likes to go to the rides. Will you take us to the rides? We're probably the last children in the world that haven't been to the rides. And on and on. After spending a couple of supper times like that, Mama would finally give up. Okay, let's get it over with, she would proclaim with a big, defeated shrug of her entire body. But here came the warning. I am going to tell you one thing right now. When we get over there, you are not going to eat junk, so don't even ask for it. As soon as the dishes were washed and dried, we all piled in our Plymouth and headed into town. The rides were set up on part of what was normally the junior high school playground, which was also the parking lot for football games. It was the dirt field between the junior high building and the Richardson's house. When I looked at that space years later, I could not imagine that it was big enough to hold what I clearly remember being there. We parked the car on the side of the street next to Bill and Bert Chambers' new house. They were funny little people whom I liked. Bill always wore a little flat cap and was usually seen walking their little bow-legged bulldog. As we were crossing the street, Mama asked the question, "Now that we are here, what do you boys want to ride first?" At age 8, I was scared of everything, a total chicken. The only real reason I even wanted to go over there was so that I could watch and hope that someone I knew either threw up or fell out. I had no answer. Joe, however, was ready to go. I later thought that since he was only 6 years old, his brain had not yet come together, so he didn't know any better. He looked at the first thing he saw, It was the gigantic circular spinning swing ride, with a ring of swings suspended by chains, slinging people out from the turning centrifugal force of a huge overhead wheel. "Right there, right there, right there!" He was pointing at the swings. "I want to ride the swings and go around and around and around in the sky." Mama sucked wind. "No, no, no. You cannot get on that terrible, dangerous thing. We do not even know who put it together. Why, if that thing came apart, you could fly off through the air. You could go sailing across the street and right through the front window of the Chambers' new house. You could kill their little pet bulldog right in the living room." I realized later that she didn't say anything about whether my brother himself might be killed. Before she even ended her sentence, Joe was pointing in another direction. "Right there, right there, right there! I want to ride the bullet!" "No, no, no, no," Mama sounded in a panic. "You cannot get on that terrible, dangerous thing. We do not even know who put it together. If that dangerous thing comes apart, you could land on the moon." Immediately, I thought, "Put him on there, quick, quick! Put him on there now!" By then, Joe was again off in another direction. "Right there, right there, right there! I want to ride the Ferris wheel!" Mama could not keep up. "No, no, 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 no! You cannot get on that terrible, dangerous thing. We do not even know who put it together. Why, if that thing comes loose, it could roll to Florida before it stops." I thought I might get on it myself if you could be sure it would take you to Florida. After all that, the only thing we actually got to ride was the merry-go-round. And we didn't get to ride on the horses either. It was obvious that they went up and down, and Mama did not know who put it together. We had to ride with her, holding her hands on the little striped bench that had giant ducks on each end of it. Still, I love the smells and sounds and sights of going to the rides. A couple of years passed. By now, I was about 10 years old, and Joe was not quite 8. Summer ended, and the rides came back. We started our supper time begging. "Can we go to the rides? You know you like to go to the rides, too. Please, take us to the rides. We will not eat junk." We had not yet been when, one night, Daddy looked across the table at Mama and pronounced, "Lucille, you don't even like the rides. Why don't you stay home and do something useful, and I will take the boys." Joe and I got into the Plymouth with Daddy. As the car rolled out of the driveway with only the three of us inside, he looked over us and said, "Ha, ha, ha, boys, we've got it made now. We can do anything we want. Do you all want to eat junk food?" He parked the car and we got out. As soon as my little brother's feet hit the ground, he started jumping up and down like a bed spring. I understood this completely, as I had seen it before. He was totally overstimulated, trying to take everything in at once. Daddy just shook his head and said to me, "You might as well decide. Besides, you are the oldest anyway. What do you want to ride?" The answer was both easy and clear. "The merry-go-round," was my quick reply. We got on the merry-go-round, and for the first time in my life, I got a horse. I did not get one in the middle either. I got on a big horse right on the outside edge, where it was dangerous. After we rode the merry-go-round three times, Daddy offered, "I've got an idea. There's a ride that wasn't here last year. Let's ride it. It's called the Octopus." We walked over to where the Octopus had been put up. It was in the back corner of the lot, near the back of the baseball stands. As we walked up, I noticed the big sign that said Octopus, spelled out in yellow light bulbs, about half of which were burned out. Why had this thing not been here before? The Octopus had gigantic mechanical arms. On the end of each was what looked like a large silvery tubby thing. The tubby things could be opened up, and you could see that there was a little seat up in there. When we walked up, the ride was not actually running. It was moving, lowering just one tubby thing at a time, unloading the victims from the last ride. "I'll get the tickets," Daddy said, as Joe and I were hypnotized, staring at the thing. It did not look like it could go as high as either the swings or the Ferris wheel. It looked like it simply went in some version of around. Since I was really scared of heights, this looked pretty good to me. Daddy handed us the tickets, and Joe and I headed for the ride. We climbed up into one of the tubby things, and they closed it up and locked us in. That's when I realized my daddy had only bought two tickets. He was not coming near that thing. Joe and I sat there laughing with anticipation of our first real ride, well, besides the merry-go-round, while the octopus moved only a notch at a time so that each tubby seat was low enough to the ground for all the new passengers to be loaded. At last, it was filled. Without any warning at all, a big, greasy-looking man pulled a lever, and we took off. It felt like the first thing that happened was that they popped your head off so that they had two parts to work with. Then the octopus took all the heads, spun them around and around, and slung them off in one direction. At the same time, it took all the bodies, tangled them up, and spun them off in the other direction. All your internal organs were then left hanging in the middle of the air, hoping they could jump back on one end or the other as your separated parts passed back by. Pretty soon, I had my head down between my knees with my eyes tightly closed and my little fingers in my ears so my liver couldn't squirt out through my brain. At the same time, another part of my body knew that I would never have children after this ride. My brother Joe wasn't even holding on. He was waving his arms around in the air and yelling, "Woo! This is fun! This is fun!" I knew that his brains had to be up in a tree somewhere over near the Chambers house. All of a sudden, he started hollering, "Look at Daddy! Look at Daddy!" I raised up and took a quick look. To my dismay, I saw my own father standing near the ticket booth, laughing his head off. After what felt like about an hour, the thing finally stopped. But it seemed like forever before they got around to our seat to unload us. Finally, the greasy man unlocked the handles and let down the front of the seat. Joe immediately stood up and proclaimed to the whole world, "I want to do it again!" He then started to step down from the high seat with the full belief that his foot was going to be the first thing to touch the ground. Was he ever wrong? When he stepped forward, his whole body took over its own movement. He ended up smacking full-length face first in the sawdust. It was pitiful. I knew better than to move until he recovered, or I would join him. I watched while my brother tried to get up. He would get up on one knee, then suddenly fall over sideways. He would then try the other knee, only to fall over in the other direction. He tried to crawl along on his belly. That's when I saw the long string of green stuff coming out of his nose. It was something to watch. Finally, he recovered. Daddy came walking up to us and said, "Well, boys, what do you want to ride now?" Without hesitation, Joe answered, "The merry-go-round." We got on, but this time, neither one of us climbed on a horse. No, we stayed seated safely on the little bench with the ducks on the end. In a few more days, this year's time of the rides came to an end. They were taken apart and loaded on trucks so they could be hauled to some other little town where the people had nothing better to do. We thought the ride business to be all over until next year. We thought. Sometime after that, our family was all at home together on a Sunday afternoon. We heard the kitchen door open, and suddenly my Aunt Edie stuck her head around the corner into the living room. Aunt Edie was our mother's little sister. She lived fairly close to us and was often coming over to our house. Usually she came with her whole family, Uncle David and her cousins, Kay and Andy, but today she had come on her own. "Come in, Edie," Mama invited. "What's going on today?" With a sheepish smile, Aunt Edie reached behind her and held up a basket. We went to look at the same time we heard the mewing sound. In the basket were two kittens. My mother spent her childhood growing up on a farm. She was so glad to get away from that farm when she grew up and became a school teacher. She was finished with all animals. We did not have pets of any kind at our house. Mother's proclamation was that she was not going to feed an animal that did not work. She did not like dogs. I actually thought she was afraid of them. She really did not like cats. Cats are nasty, she would argue. Just imagine something that digs in its own bathroom with its own hands. Cats jump up on your lap without an invitation. Then they lick your face. And if they smell milk on your breath, they will lick you right on the lips. Then they jump down and slime around your legs. I can't stand that, I would argue back. Cats are not slimy. They are furry. Mother would not lose the argument. It's their attitude, she concluded. Jo and I knew that she was not happy with Aunt Edie bringing those cats into our house. What in the world are you doing with these cats? She asked her sister. Aren't they cute? I got them from Mrs. Galloway as presents for Kay's birthday. Suddenly, I understood everything. Kay was, of course, my cousin. I knew exactly when her birthday was, and it was not her birthday. No, Kay's birthday was not going to come around for 2 more weeks. Suddenly, all of us understood why Aunt Edie had come over with the cats. She wanted us to keep them for her until time for Kay's birthday, to hide the cats for 2 weeks. Mama had 2 words to say about that idea. N-O, not in this house. Aunt Edie looked shocked. What am I going to do then? I was counting on your help. I don't know what to do. Suddenly, my brother Joe piped up. I'll do it, he offered with excitement. I would like to do it. How are you going to take care of these cats if they cannot come in the house? Mama countered. I'll keep them in the garage, was Joe's answer. They're nasty, Mama wouldn't give up. I'll wash my hands every time I touch them. Joe wouldn't give up either. They'll still be nasty, she kept on. I'll wash my hands every time I look at them. They'll still be nasty. I'll wash my hands every time I think about them. Joe just kept on. Aunt Edie joined the argument. It's only 2 weeks, and I even brought the food. She held up a paper bag, obviously full. I give up, Mama folded. Okay, you can keep them 2 weeks under one condition. She pointed her finger at Joe as she laid out the limits. You cannot give them names. If you give them names, you know what is going to happen. You will get attached to them. They will get attached to you. Everybody will think they live here, and we will never get rid of them. Joe's face fell, but he finally agreed. Okay, no names. I'll just have to call them right and left. Everyone laughed except Mama. So the plan was made. Joe kept the cats in the garage behind the house and fed them there morning and night. He washed his hands about 200 times a day. He was totally happy. The next morning, Joe came back into the house after feeding the kittens. Do we have any more baskets? He asked Mama. What do you need with more baskets? What's wrong with that one? She wondered. Those cats are just like us. They won't quit fighting. I need to separate them. There was a little room on the back of our house that everyone called that room. In that room, we kept everything that no one on the face of the earth would ever need again in their life, but they might. It contained every flattened brown paper grocery bag that had ever come into our house from the grocery store, deflated footballs and basketballs that would never hold air again, small kidney-shaped pans for every time someone in our family had been in the hospital, every piece of Tupperware ever made that had lost a lid, Christmas tree lights that didn't work last year but might somehow come back on this year, and an assortment of old Easter baskets. Mama headed out there and soon came back with 2 Easter baskets. They were just alike and even still had faded pink plastic grassy stuff in the bottom. She gave the baskets to Joe. He separated the cats and put 1 into each basket, and the whole world was happy. The following day was a Sunday, so our whole family was at home. After lunch, Joe headed out to the garage to check on the cats. He was not gone 5 minutes when we heard screaming. It was Joe screaming his head off. The sound was not coming from the direction of the garage, though. It was coming from the backyard of our house. As he kept screaming, you could tell that he was coming toward the house. He was yelling words, but he was shrieking so desperately that his voice seemed to turn wrong side out, and we could not understand a word he said. He got to the door, and it flew open. Joe came crying into the house, and the first words we could understand were, "They're dead! They're dead! They're dead! Dead! Dead!" Our entire family was running toward the door. heading out into the yard to see what in the world had happened. When we arrived in the yard, there they were, the two little cats, flat on the ground. You could tell that they were breathing, but not very successfully. They were almost coughing and wheezing. One of them tried to get up off the ground, and it fell right over on its side, legs trying to walk in thin air. The other one tried to get up, and it fell the same way. Then they began to crawl along the ground on their bellies, and we saw long, slimy green stuff coming out of their noses. "They're not dead," Daddy announced. "But what in the world happened to them?" We were looking at Joe. He picked up the two baskets, one in each hand, and as he swung them around and around over his head, he answered, "I let them ride the octopus." Then he disintegrated into tears. "I'm sorry, they didn't do any better than we did." Mama walked over to the two little cats. She looked down at them, then did something that none of us believed. With her own two little cat-hating hands, she reached down and picked up the cats. She held the cats up against her heart like she loved them. Mama began petting the little cats until in no time they were purring happily. And she gave them names, or at least we thought she did. As she kept petting and they kept purring, she called one of them Pitiful and the other one Unfortunate. Then she announced, "I better take them in the house." We all watched, still in disbelief, as Mama took the cats into the house where we lived. Not only that, she took them right into the kitchen where we ate food. And while she kept holding and petting them, she got hold of the telephone and called Aunt Edie. We were all listening. "Edie," we heard her start softly, "I hate to have to call to tell you this. There is a problem. I hate to be the one to tell you this, but you are going to have to get Kay some more cats for her birthday, because I love these, and we are going to keep them." And for the rest of her life, every time you went to see my mama, you had to put up with jumping on your lap, licking your face, rubbing around your legs, Pitiful and Unfortunate, my mama's first cats. My next reading is from Muddling Through, Perspectives on Parenting by Bill Lepp from Wikipedia. Bill Lepp is an American storyteller and a 5-time winner of the West Virginia State Liars Contest. He performs at storytelling festivals around the nation and is a regular performer at the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee. The excerpt I am reading today is from Don't Get Too Attached to Balloons. "Don't get too attached to those balloons," I pleaded with the kids. "One thing you can be sure of in this life is that balloons won't be with us all that long." My son was 8. He'd found a clown at a street fair who was twisting balloons into poodles and giraffes. Never one to settle for the simple, my son asked the clown for an octopus. I could see by the clown's expression that he was thinking, "Great. An 8-legged sea creature. Just what I wanted to make out of balloons while balancing on 8-foot stilts. I should have gone into bookkeeping." That clown was a trooper, though. He smiled, blew up 4 balloons, and started twisting away. Soon, there was a creature that had a big head and 6 legs. The clown handed it to my son. My son said, "It's only got 6 legs." "Well," said the clown, "it's a sixtopus." My daughter was 4. She just wanted a poodle. It's not every day a kid can make a clown happy. While walking back to the car, the sixtopus suffered a heinous accident to one leg. "Well," I said, "now you have a pentapus. Parenting is all about looking for the right side. Parenting also is about looking through the dictionary so you can make up words like pentapus." My daughter's poodle exploded for no discernible reason. That left my daughter with nothing but the shattered and torn remnants of a white balloon and a little clown spit in her hand. "Well," I did not say, "now you have a corpse. Parenting is all about not going over to the dark side." Instead, I said, "It pays not to get too attached to balloons." One weekend, we hit the road for a 3-day trip. I'm a professional storyteller and tour often. When they can, my wife and kids join me. At one show, a friendly old lady gave my daughter a handful of helium balloons. As we were getting into the van, one of the balloons escaped. I watched the balloon head toward the clouds, and then I looked back at my daughter. Her face was locked into that silent, bitter, heartbreaking sob that only 4-year-olds can manufacture. I thought she'd been stung by a wasp or bitten by a snake, or that she had just seen her mother carried off by rabid camels. "What's wrong?" I asked. She gasped, pointed at the balloon disappearing into the sky, and managed to say, "Oh, Daddy, that was your favorite balloon." Up to that point, I hadn't realized that I had a favorite balloon. I thought I hated all balloons equally. I try not to get too attached to balloons. I thought fast. "No, no," I said. "This is my favorite balloon." I snatched a balloon from her remaining handful. "See," I explained, "mine has a white ribbon." I pointed at the balloon, now barely visible above the distant tree line. "That one has a blue ribbon." "Are you sure?" my daughter asked doubtfully. "Sure, I'm sure. Parenting is all about lying." I've heard it said that if you have kids, you should have a pet, one reason being that the pet will eventually die, and then you can explain about loss and death to your kids. I'm not sure that that is the best reason to have a pet. Certainly, the pet might have something to say on the subject. We did have a great dog for years, and then he got sick and passed on. I guess it was good for the kids to learn that lesson. We didn't get the dog just so he would die. But after many years, he finally and inevitably did. We were attached to the dog. The poor dog had a tumor on his head, and it was obvious that he was ill. The obvious tumor didn't do a thing for the dog, but it didn't make the dog's plight easier to understand for the children. They could see that he was ill, and thus it was easier to explain to the kids what was happening when the dog, Buck Dog, eventually passed. The kids were ready for it. No one was happy about it, but everyone was prepared. Balloons, on the other hand, are not as handy for teaching kids about loss and death. The main reason being that a balloon will be sitting there perfectly calm on the kitchen floor and then explode for no apparent reason at all. One second the balloon is there making us all happy, the next moment it's a choking hazard. This sort of violent demise seldom happens to domestic pets. You can envision eventually saying to your kids, "Well, Granny got sick and died, just like Buck Dog." I seriously doubt that I will ever have to say, "Well, kids, Granny just all of a sudden popped. One second she was sitting there, and the next..." I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying I doubt it will happen. So, I advise my kids not to get too attached to balloons. That's all we have time for today. Join me next month for That's a Laugh. I'm Sharon Silcox with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website at trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. And remember, life's a circus. Enjoy the show.